Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for Thursday, March 23rd. A lot of free agent signings to get to from across the league. Yes, there is still some movement that we're going to get into for fantasy purposes. We're also going to be talking some wide receiver strategy over on Underdog Best Ball Drafts. Let's start the show. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast presented by our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. Mario, what's going on? How are you doing today on this fine Thursday?
Oh, fine. I've got a UPS delivery happening maybe like right during the show. So if I run away without saying anything, it might be because of that. Okay. I'll come back though.
All right, good to know on all fronts. I told you that we needed to talk about this before the show, but good to know nonetheless.
It's a signature required thing. This first time that's ever happened to me. It's awful.
Oh gosh, yeah, a little throwback, a little old school. I got a coffee grinder in the mail yesterday, so that was pretty much the highlight of my week thus far.
If it was a mere coffee grinder, I wouldn't have even added this to your list of concerns, but I'll come back if I run off wordlessly.
Noted. All right. Well, in advance of that, in anticipation of, why don't we get to some of the latest news and notes from around the league? Because even after that initial wave of free agent signings happens as the new league year gets underway, there's still a bunch of movement that goes on that of course has a major impact, especially for fantasy. And the way that the wide receiver market was slow to take shape this year, and basically all the fantasy positions outside of quarterback been slow to take shape. We still have a couple of massive dominoes with Rodgers and Jackson still to find their next places to play for the 2023 season. So it's been slow moving, all things considered. But we got some things yesterday that came in the works. First, I believe I'm getting this chain of events correctly, Mario. Mecole Hardman signs with the New York Jets, and then and everyone's like, wait a second, they already got Alan Lazard, they already have Garrett Wilson. How many of these guys do they need? Is he even on the Rodgers wish list? Is he allowed into on this? And then also, what are they going to do with Elijah Moore? Well, problem solved there. Elijah Moore traded to the Cleveland Browns. I think it's been long thought that, or at least not long thought, but at least since the start of last season, the way that things unfolded, that Moore and the Jets were kind of not going to fit long term, regardless of who the OC was. I think a fresh start was needed on both sides. But let's kick things off with Hardman. What does this do for you? Was this an anticipated potential landing spot for you when it comes to Mecole, and what can he do with gangrene?
Well, I had no idea what Hardman's kind of market was, or even what most teams even think of him as. Like, I could imagine some teams thinking he's an outside receiver, we use him on vertical routes in our offense. I could imagine other teams saying, oh no, he's just a slot guy, you have to run him from the slot, he's too small to play outside. But for teams that prioritize speed on the boundary, and I don't know where the Jets come in here. I mean, Lazard is primarily a slot receiver, I would say, like a big slot receiver. He can play outside. You just don't really want him doing that unless it's like, I don't know, like a third and short play action kind of thing, or you're in the opposing red zone. When the field gets smaller, basically, Lazard can play outside, but usually he's in the slot. So I could imagine Hardman being a pretty good fit as a, not strictly an outside receiver. You could play inside or out, I think. But for the Jets, he makes a lot of sense because he's out. If he's outside, he's kind of isolating one of the safeties on one of the sides of the field. And in theory, it should free up either or both of Lazard, Wilson, obviously Wilson more so, projecting for usage there. But I think it sets up well because a lot of teams don't do a good enough job of thinking of like the spatial element, the sort of just physical balance of an offense. And they kind of think like, let's just accumulate guys who are just vaguely good at, you know, running slants and curls and catching passes. And you need space for those guys. You can't have four of them running the same routes at the same time. You need some kind of person creating space or some source of space for which these guys to run can run through. And I think Mecole Hardman, with the Chiefs, he had some struggles as like running into traffic, holding onto the ball in traffic, and running like option type routes, which Mahomes has so many of in that offense. And if you can't run those option routes well with Mahomes, they'll kind of put you on the bench, which happened a lot with obviously the last 2 years with Hardman. But when he's on the field, he's effective. If he's running, I think, more like track meet kind of routes, like a track meet kind of offense suits Hardman a lot better. Just have him run posts and fly routes. If the defense knows it's coming, fine. They still have to run with him. You know, make somebody work, at least make somebody you know, have to catch their breath after a few plays. And if it doesn't go to Hardman, at least he pulled someone out of the play. And if that someone slips up or doesn't take the speed threat seriously enough, I don't know why so many people have lost sight of this. Hardman is actually very good on deep routes. The problem was with the Chiefs, when they were getting those two high responses from the defenses, they were just sitting deep on those routes that he was getting open on so easily as a rookie. And then underneath, he just kind of wasn't good enough to sort of like, after Hill and Kelsey had their pickings, Hardman, you know, couldn't make enough of an impact on the shallower parts. But if you only ask him to run those distance routes, it's a good way to keep the safety high. And Rodgers, with the deep ball that he has, I think it'd actually be really pretty tough to stop to Hardman deep. Or it's at least it's going to be the kind of thing where if Wilson and Lazard are not getting open underneath for, you know, chain moving reliable gains, then the big play for Hardman will be there and they'll be prepared to actually, you know, capitalize on it.
Right, because Hardman last year, you know, his A dot was just 8 yards. Down the field, that's not really an area of the field that suggests that the Chiefs were getting the most out of his vertical speed. Obviously, you can't really make too many gripes about the Chiefs' offense. They are the Super Bowl champions. But when it comes to Hardman, there's room for optimized usage, and we'll see if the Jets can unlock that a little bit. And then, you know, as it comes to Wilson, Garrett Wilson, I don't want to mischaracterize anything that you've said, but is this fully something that the Mecole Hardman signing, is it something the Jets needed to do as far as adding that space element to where Wilson doesn't get overused underneath, or also you know, have the A dot increase, but then the volume drops off?
Well, I think with a player like Wilson, the theory is almost like you can't overuse him. So you try to find as many ways as possible to create usage for him. And the reasons you wouldn't be able to get the ball to Garrett Wilson would be something to the effect of like, oh, this safety in this corner have the beats down on these, you know, routes that we run, and they're jumping it, and we need to, you know, make them pay for that. Like that's a situation where Hardman's useful because he can make that safety, you know, even without actually acting on the threat. They can just kind of put Hardman on the same side as Wilson if they want to do this and dare that safety to crash toward Wilson again, you know, because if they do, they understand it as cutting loose Hardman deep, which even if it, as a defense, you don't care that much about Hardman in the game plan, it's something you're loath to do. You don't want to be like the safety who gives up the wide open deep touchdown, which is a real risky run when you let Hardman go one-on-one vertically. So I think what Hardman does is he just gives them another way to free up Garrett Wilson, who I think, I don't know, they might want to get him like upwards of a third of their target volume or something like that. Lazard's going to take something too, but Lazard, like Hardman, I think ideally is kept more toward that one target per like 10 snaps kind of thing. Whereas with Wilson, last year it must've been like one every seven. And I bet they're trying to get it down to even like one every six or something.
All right. I see the theory behind all of this for the Jets. And do we think that Corey Davis is as good as gone then?
Yeah. It's such a weird market of veterans right now. I guess a receiver, it's pretty much picked over aside from the trade things. But I don't know if it's possible that they bring back Davis on a pay cut or something. They might just be done with him. It would be understandable enough that they say, like, we can't afford to have this, like, starter caliber player who's only available like 5 weeks a year. It messes with our depth chart too much. So that might be their viewpoint. Otherwise, Davis is in for a pay cut wherever he's playing next year, you know?
Corey Davis, you are a Raven. Congratulations.
That sounds right, actually.
Yeah, that feels on brand.
Shrewd bargain. Another shrewd bargain at receiver for Eric DaCosta.
Oh, love it. Let's see here. So let's get to Elijah Moore. Super promising as a prospect. I thought he showed some flashes in his rookie season. And last year, put a hurting on his believers as far as the fantasy investors were concerned. It obviously didn't pan out. Pretty much gets jumped immediately as far as the the Garrett Wilson goes in the target distribution. And again, he's gone now. He's in Cleveland. We have two outside receivers in Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones. We have Deshaun Watson having knocked off the rust a little bit late in the season last year. Didn't look particularly good, of course, but there's something to be said for at least just getting back in the fray a little bit, getting used to the live action, as it were. So what are your thoughts here on Moore's fit with the Browns? And, is this a move that you felt like the Browns needed to make as far as bolstering that slot option?
Well, slot receiver is not like a premium position. They didn't really need to urgently go get one, but it's one of those things like if it's hanging around and you could just get a good slot receiver upgrade, go for it. It's real production. It's just, in theory, it's like production that's easier to find than at some other parts of the field, other depths of the field. But I think with Moore, it's pretty simply the case that whereas in 2021, the Jets kind of, maybe they didn't make him a focal point of the offense, but at the very least, they kind of let everything just sort of play out, I feel like. And Moore in that 1 year played almost, not exclusively, but very much primarily in the slot and primarily at low depths. I want to say his depth of target was like 7-something his rookie year. And something changed last year. He's played, especially earlier in the year, he played outside primarily. They moved him into the slot as the year went on. But in the first like 6 weeks, they primarily played Garrett Wilson in the slot. And that's not because Wilson was limited to the slot. They, like I said, they moved him more to the boundary as the year went on. And by the end of the year, after their little Cold War between the Jets and Moore, they put Moore back on the field and mostly in the slot. But even then, they were calling routes too far downfield, like 10-plus yards downfield. And Moore is the kind of receiver who can make some plays downfield. I mean, he's runs like the 4.36 or whatever, but he's only like 5'9 and 3/4 or something like that. And he's not like a jump ball guy. So the further you send a player like that downfield, the less effective you make them. And I think they were specifically sending him to those depths because they were dialing up so much for Garrett Wilson. So I think Joe Douglas is pretty awful as a GM for a lot of reasons, but for this one particular case, we have in Moore a player who has certain limitations. Like he's primarily a slot receiver. He's primarily an underneath or maybe intermediate receiver. And in that capacity, if you have usage to distribute from those parts of the field, he projects very well. He ranks, you know, he profiles as quite good, actually. So if you're taking more in the second round of the 2021 draft, wouldn't you sort of in your mind already have a bit of a vision, a budget laid out where you're like, well, let's take more. We understand he's just a slot receiver. We understand he's mostly just underneath, but we're going to clear out all this usage for him. And that's going to give us a good bang for our buck at receiver. Like the second round pick is going to give us these really good returns and it's going to be great. And then instead of seeing to that or thinking that through that way in the first place, they take Garrett Wilson. Understandable enough. I mean, I understand taking a player like Garrett Wilson, but even with Garrett Wilson and even with Elijah Moore on the same team, they could have run an offense differently than they did last year. They could have made Garrett Wilson run further downfield, something they chose not to do because they knew it would be a downward pressure on his per snap target volume. It's harder to get targets the further downfield you run. So they said in the end, the difference was, you know, they called downfield routes for Moore basically as a decoy. And even to the extent that it wasn't explicitly a decoy function, he was still worse at it than he would have been on the alternative, to the point that it was effectively rendering him useless. So this is all on the Jets, in my opinion. Douglas, the coaching staff, whoever we want to blame. I'll blame mostly Douglas because he is the one in charge. But yeah, it's funny. I think you can see in the trade framework with Cleveland that Douglas wanted it specifically to be framed as like, we got a second rounder. We got our money back for Elijah Moore, everyone.
Right.
No, he didn't. You just wasted a year, 2 years of his career and 2 years of his contract equity or whatever. And you used him as a chip to move up in a draft 2 years after you drafted him, which is traditionally a one round devaluation per year delayed. So yeah, not a good job by Joe Douglas. Good pickup for the Browns. And he should function well there because Cooper and Peoples-Jones are so good outside. Like they don't need to get in the slot.
No, exactly. So that I think this sets up well for Moore in that sense. He's like a 10th round guy on underdog best ball. What one element that stands out to me that's like a little bit counter to what I was expecting from him coming out of Ole Miss is the catch rate has been perilously low thus far. And, you know, the average depth of target of over 11 yards down the field each of those first 2 years, like you said, maybe that's a little bit too far for you know, what his optimal usage might be. But is there anything that you can kind of reason behind why Elijah Moore is catching just 55% of his targets thus far? Is it just quarterback play?
Yeah, I forgot that his depth of target was about the same the rookie year, but the rookie year was almost entirely from the slot in that sample. And even though it's low in general for the relative to the Jets baseline, it was not.
Okay.
Like it was because, you know, the Jets completing like 54% of their passes or whatever, catching 43 of 77 is actually pretty good. But yeah, it's a low catch rate, I think. Certainly, and maybe primarily because of the Jets quarterbacks, but also because of the depth of the target being too far downfield. Like generally, depth of target and catch rate is a trade-off. In addition to, you know, the further downfield, the fewer targets you draw per snap. It's also generally true, reliably true, the further downfield, the lower the catch rate. So you lower the depth of target to like 7 or whatever it should be for Elijah Moore. And I think he's in whatever the specifics aside, you're going to get a above baseline producer as long as he's playing in the slot, as long as it's under 8.5 yards, under 8.5 average depth of target.
All right. I like it. I like it. And so, you know, tying all that together now, like you look at Elijah Moore versus someone like a KJ Osborne who goes in a very similar ADP, DPJ himself, his new teammate, also goes in that same range. So like, do you have a preference between those three as it stands?
We could almost make like a half episode out of it in the future, John, but I'm so out on all just non-Justin Jefferson Vikings.
Okay.
And that definitely includes Osborne. I know people have been wanting to see it with him for the past year and a half, but I don't think it's there. And his numbers would look really bad last year if it wasn't for that ridiculous second half collapse by the Colts defense in that one game. So yeah, I thought Osborne was already perilously overexposed as a wide receiver 3, and if the Vikings really try to do this thing where like Osborne's in a wide receiver two now. I think it can get worse yet. I think Kirk Cousins was bad last year and can get a lot worse yet. So I definitely prefer both Browns receivers over Osborne. It's actually right about where the Peoples-Jones sort of area in the ADP is, but where it gets tough. And I don't know how to call it between those two. I mean, in theory, the trade-off should be with more, you're looking at fewer snaps, but a higher per snap target rate such that he still gets more targets than Peoples-Jones and therefore maybe more catches. But Peoples-Jones, being the kind of athlete he is, the kind of, you know, big yards per target that he's had in each of his 3 years, he might be the better option for, like, if you're looking for big plays. So, in for instance, underdogs, best ball scoring of half-point PPR, I think Peoples-Jones gains ground on Elijah Moore there, whereas with full-point PPR, it's maybe a little bit better suited to Moore.
Good. I mean, that's a good point there when it comes to the scoring and you know what each of those guys offer as far as their game and their fantasy production is coming from. And actually, I think that's a good segue point to talk about Underdog this week. Before we get there, the 2022 NFL season is over, but fantasy football season never stops over at Underdog, the easiest place to play fantasy football. Right now, you can draft in Underdog's The Big Board Tournament with $1 million in total prizes and $200,000 given out to first place. I just drafted a couple of those earlier this week, so that $200,000, surely mine. Think you know which incoming rookies will burst onto the scene in 2023? If so, now's your chance to draft them at a value. All you have to do is join The Big Board, draft your fantasy team, and that's it. In best ball, there's no waivers, no trades, and you get the best scores in your starting lineup each week of the season. And whoever has the highest scores at the end of the season win. Just head to underdogfantasy.com, the App Store, or the Google Play Store, and sign up with the promo code RWNFL. And not only will you get your first deposit doubled up to $100, but we will also hook you up with a six-month subscription to everything RotoWire has to offer for free. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWNFL. All right, Mario, so let's talk some receivers. So as I mentioned in that ad read, I've picked up on my best ball drafting over this last week. You know, we got about a month until the draft. I want to, you know, stockpile some shares before things really start moving around. And we're also a little bit past that initial wave of free agency. And I thought that receiver has been a relatively consistent source of frustration for me in these drafts because, you know, running back obviously stocked in the first two rounds. I mean, everything is stocked in the first two rounds, but the relative drop-offs at both positions once you get into the third round is really interesting to me. So I guess I want to lead things off for you. Say you're picking outside of the top five, somewhere between 5 and 10, who would your preferred receiver options be between, say, the likes of like Stephon Diggs, Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, and Tyreek Hill?
Well, I've taken Cooper Kupp ahead of all of them, but that was mostly just because of where the draft slot was. It was kind of like if I wanted to get a Cooper Kupp share, I had to, it made as much sense then as ever because he was unlikely to be available later anyway. Whereas I have Tyreek Hill ranked about the same as Cooper Kupp, but I you know, because you can get him a pick or two later, I usually try to specifically get him a pick or two later rather than the few, you know, I'm not loaded with Cooper Kupp teams. So it's like occasional exposure I want to get there, but I have him ranked with about the same as Tyreek Hill. Obviously Stafford very much a required condition for sure. Cooper Kupp to be ranked that high, but we just saw it in 2021, Stafford, Kupp, McVay is really all they need to put up, you know, almost 1800, 1900 yards. So I'm higher on Kupp than most people, but I'm also really high on Tyreek Hill. And I think he doesn't really need Tua to be back to be worth it. Like ideally Tua would be there. And I more or less expect that, but even if they go to some backup or even if, I don't know, the off chance like Tua is unavailable and they sign Tom Brady or something, I think McDaniel and Tyreek Hill are the part that made that go, not really so much Tua. But it's after that I would probably, or I'm sorry, I'd have Diggs also ranked about the same as those guys, actually. But again, I kind of take him later than I do Cup and Hill just because I can. Sometimes Diggs falls just too far, just like last year. Nothing different than last year. Same thing's happening. Diggs falls too far. Like, if you believe Josh Allen is going to be the quarterback for the Bills and the Bills are going to run the offense as they have the last 2 years, Stephon Diggs should almost never fall out of the first seven picks, in my opinion. I don't think there's anything wrong with taking him as high as like three or four, honestly.
Yeah, I don't either. I just, for whatever reason, maybe like the way the last season ended kind of left a sour taste in my mouth when it comes to Diggs. But, you know, certainly want to stockpile some shares, late first round shares in particular. But once you get past the second round, I think that there's kind of an interesting tier drop off where once DK Metcalf comes off the board, which is usually early to mid third, then you kind of reach this weird dead zone, or it's not a dead zone. These are good players, but a little bit less of slam dunks, in my opinion. So you have Deebo Samuel, Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, Mike Williams. Which of those guys are you going after, if any, or is this a tier that like you're just hoping to skip over and already have like your first one or two receivers already locked up?
Actually, I often pick receiver when these guys are going off the board. I'm pretty much out on Deebo. I think he's awesome, but I just don't think the 49ers are going to throw enough, and his durability concerns are substantial enough that I just can't really take him until probably something more like the fifth or something, which he never falls to. So in this range, pretty clearly to me, Calvin Ridley is the top target, and I don't even think you really need to project much growth for Trevor Lawrence for that to be the case. But if you do project growth for Trevor Lawrence, then I think Ridley's kind of going too late, as much as I understand why he's going as late as he is. I get it. The unknown, the generally unprecedented scenario as it is. But if Calvin Ridley is Calvin Ridley, then this is simple. I like Christian Kirk a lot too. I think they're both going to be really good this year, but Calvin Ridley's like a 1400 yard player with Trevor Lawrence. So I'm going with Calvin Ridley there primarily. Also like Cooper more than Deebo, in part because I am expecting Deshaun Watson to do quite a bit better this year. Hopkins is a little bit tougher. I don't really like to, but sometimes I take Mike Williams in this spot, like in situations where I'm like, oh, come on, I hope Ridley falls to me, and he doesn't. I maybe usually take Williams in that case, and it's more
interesting.
Like,
I know you never like taking Mike Williams.
Well, he gets a lot of targets in the offense, and I still think Keenan Allen might get cut. So to me, Mike Williams is a very, I don't want to say this about a guy who's had the injury history that he has, but he's per game projection wise, per snap projection wise, he's extremely high floor for that range. And it is often easy if you don't take a receiver, if you're not leaving this like fourth round spot with at least two receivers, it's pretty easy to wait till your next pick. And in some of these drafts, it's worse than others. But if you're in a draft where there's like two or three zero running back teams, you might see like nine receivers go off the board before your next pick.
No, exactly. Like it's been, again, really tricky to navigate. And I feel like that's a clear tier that dries up at probably after Williams or DJ Moore. I'd say
I have Kirk pretty close. I actually have Kirk ahead of DJ Moore just because I don't really know what to make of the Bears passing game. But yeah, I really don't want to be in a position, as a lot of teams are, where I'm looking at like Christian Watson and Michael Pittman as my wide receiver two or something. At the very least, I'd much rather go with some players going later than them, but I also don't want to be in that market in the first place.
So I hate that part of the draft too. And it's, again, like, I don't hate those players in a vacuum, but you don't feel great about them as your wide receiver too. And so someone that I've collected a decent amount of exposure to as a result, I think Terry McLaurin is still one of the best receivers in the league. And he stands out to me as a clear value. And I understand that there's some consternation about the quarterback situation there in Washington, you know, but we don't know what Sam Howell is going to be. Yeah, I guess Jacoby Brissett comes in as a bit of like a safety policy. Oh, suppose you might need to go sign.
Yeah, sorry. Hold on just a second. I'll be right back.
All right. I will continue my screed on one Terry McLaurin. But, you know, as we saw last year, we knew going into the year when it came to Amari Cooper that Jacoby Brissett would be his starting quarterback. And it wasn't always sexy, but, you know, Amari Cooper was able to get the job done. I envisioned something similar with McLaurin, where the talent kind of supersedes maybe a relative lack of quarterback talent, a relative lack of quality when it comes to the targets that he's getting, whether it is Sam Howell or Jacoby Brissett. But I will just kind of put a ringing endorsement on McLaurin, especially where he's going in drafts. I don't know how much of that you caught, Mario.
I caught a bunch of it. Sorry, I tried to mute the mic, but apparently I got to hit a different mute button.
Not at all.
So I think Howell is actually the best case scenario for McLaurin because he's a chucker. And mm-hmm. McLaurin, if he's just going deep, you know, getting tons of air yards, that's fine. And I actually expect Howell to be the best fit possible, actually, among the first. I think it's safe to say among the quarterbacks McLaurin has had so far, Howell would actually be the best fit for him.
I'm pumped to hear that. I'm going to continue to get, like, again, I don't expect the market to really change too much on McLaurin. I think that he's going to continue to be a value basically all the way until the preseason. They're obviously not going to change a whole lot through the draft, whether it's at quarterback or receiver, because they already have Dotson. So I feel like he's just, you know, we're not going to hear anything that really like gives helium. So I think that McLaurin's going to remain this really nice value where he's going.
I think some people might come to their senses about like Pittman and Watson, like Christian Watson and Michael Pittman and even Jerry Jeudy should not be going ahead of McLaurin. I mean, that's just silly. So I think that kind of stuff might catch up to reasoning, but the highest, like the absolute highest McLaurin could be going, even if people do kind of catch up on stuff, would be like 45 or something. So I don't have a ton of exposure just because I'm already, I guess, looking to a different position or something by the time I'm on the, like, I've already taken like Kirk or whatever, Ridley. But I would like to get more McLaurin. I will say though, if it's Brissett, that's bad news in my opinion. Not that Brissett's necessarily worse than Howell for real life purposes, but for fantasy, that's bad news for everybody.
Okay. That it could be bad. I don't know. I was just saying that Brissett still kept Cooper afloat. I know that they're
he did. He's different. Just not a deep ball guy, you know? And it's like McLaurin's just so unbelievably good. Like, it's easy to forget because he's been on that stupid team this whole time, but McLaurin can do pretty much the same thing as anybody else. Like he's about as good as there is.
Yeah. I love Scary Terry. I loved what I saw from Dotson late last year. So I think Washington actually is sneakily a decent cheap stack that you can target. Again, you get McLaurin, you get Dotson about three rounds later, and then, you know, you get Howell with your quarterback three, and you know, things might end up working out. As we round things out on this wide receiver discussion, Mario, who's one guy you've been getting in the 16th round or later consistently at the receiver position?
16th round. So I've been taking a lot of couple rookies in the 20th round. I take Xavier Hutchinson a bunch. I don't really have anything, you know, tangible, substantive to give anybody on that one. I just think Hutchinson is really good, and I feel like people are going to eventually notice. And I think when you turn the tape, it's clear he's quite good, but he doesn't have the draft capital in the meantime. He's not like a freaky athlete, so you can get him in the 20th. I've taken him a bunch. I think he's pretty low risk, high upside as far as the range goes. Tyler Scott, apparently he's not going to go any higher. I still feel like there's a bunch of like ADP adjustment to be made of people just kind of looking for the first time, or, you know, doing their own research for the first time as opposed to just doing what somebody else told them to in the meantime. So Tyler Scott is someone who should start costing more because he's going to go in the second or third round. And clearly the current ADP doesn't recognize that. The current ADP thinks he's going to go in like the fifth. He's not. So he's someone that I take quite a bit. And otherwise, I think so 16th round would be something.
I think we've got it covered as far as.
Oh, Deontay Hardy, I like quite a bit with Buffalo. I think he's actually like a pretty ideal best ball pick because he's so high. Depth of target, high yards after the catch.
Oh, I like that idea as well. And they obviously jettisoned McKenzie earlier.
Finally, this week. They listened to me personally.
They did, and they directly disobeyed me. I always like McKenzie because he went to Georgia, but I definitely
like him too. He's a wide receiver 4 or 5, not the wide receiver 3.
Yes, a little bit, a lot overexposed last year, but let's go. That's going to round it out. For our underdog best ball segment again. Get in on that underdog promo, RWNFL. Get your first deposit matched up to $100. Get that 6-month RotoWire subscription. It's going to work out. Go ahead. Again, that is RWNFL. Sticking with receivers, Mario, Brandon Cooks on the move. Again, and this is not a pre-recorded thing. Brandon Cooks has been traded. Once again, I believe this is the fourth time he has been dealt in his career. Other than his U-Haul stuff, but at least he doesn't have to move super far, just staying in the state of Texas. You like this move for the Cowboys?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think is maybe actually getting overlooked credit-wise, just because people are still so pissed off at Jerry Jones for trading away Amari Cooper last year, and now more or less acquiring Brandon Cooks for the same terms. I guess it could be seen as, a retraction without actually making it a formal retraction, like admitting you're wrong without admitting it. I don't know if that's driving some of the kind of like indifference toward this, but I think Cooks is very clearly a really good receiver, and to the point that he might actually infringe a little tiny bit on the target share of CeeDee Lamb relative to last, because Noah Brown's just some guy. Michael Gallup was playing at like 80% when he was playing. They had what's his name? That Dennis Houston guy that I still never learned the name of. Like, he was playing. Kevontae Turpin, T.Y. Hilton. So these are the players that CeeDee Lamb was competing with for targets. So Cooks is the kind of guy. He's not like a wide receiver one exactly, but I think he could be the lead receiver on an above average passing game. So he's behind CeeDee Lamb for sure. I mentioned this all to say this is really great news for Dak Prescott, and I don't know how much people are noticing that, because a lot of people too are just like, oh, Dak sucks. I'm so sick of Dak. Dak's terrible. Like they do this like every 2.5 years or whatever, when he has a bad game on a national television or something, that the Dak sucks confetti is dropped again and the parade comes out, and it's about to go back again, as it always does. Switching out Dalton Schultz for Jake Ferguson is a big upgrade, in my opinion. And maybe that's how CeeDee Lamb's target volume stays the same, even with Cooks getting there. Because like Ferguson, part of why I like him more than Schultz is because he can make contributions without drawing targets. So Jake Ferguson can be a greater like war contributor than Schultz while taking fewer targets. So he can, part of why he can be better is that he helps without getting in the way of Lamb and Cooks. And Gallup too should be better this year, being fully healthy. So I was never as big of a Gallup fan as some people, but he's, I think, no worse than like average as a starter.
Yeah, he's solid. Like that.
So if you're talking like borderline average starters or wide receiver 3, and a borderline wide receiver 1 is your wide receiver 2, and a top 10 receiver is your wide receiver 1, that's a combination of targets that Dak hasn't really had. So I think people should expect him to benefit quite a bit from that, even if they're not like gung-ho about Cooks specifically, although I view it as a huge upgrade.
Yeah, I like Cooks. I'm certainly a lot more interested in him in best ball drafts now that he's in a competent offense. And I think that, it takes some of the pressure off of CeeDee Lamb. I think that I'm more comfortable taking Lamb where he goes. I'd kind of like forgotten about where Dak really fits into the calculus of all of that in the drafting sense. I hadn't really scooped him up
it's
yet,
but huge. It moves him up like a whole round or something for me.
Okay, so I'm definitely gonna have to take a look at that. And then, do you also think that with Ezekiel Elliott being gone, that they just simply throw it a little bit more this year too?
I don't know what to make of that Ronald Jones signing. I still think Ronald Jones can play snaps on a good offense, and especially if you're letting him run between the tackles a little bit. So I don't know how much of that is them saying Elliott took X carries per game. Jones will take this many less than that. I don't know if that's something they're viewing it as at all. But yeah, if Elliott's carries are not viewed as almost one-to-one to Ronald Jones or maybe some other rookie that they get or something, the slack kind of has to go to the air. And if that's happening at the same time that Schultz leaves, I think this could be pretty close to a career year for Cooks, even with Lamb pushing whatever, like 1500 yards himself.
That, I mean, that would be massive. That would be absolutely huge. And let's unpack Ferguson a little bit more for the uninitiated, because it's totally understandable to not be highly familiar with one Jake Ferguson, but having lived in Madison, like we have Jake Ferguson, grandson of local legend Barry Alvarez, and longtime player for the Wisconsin Badgers, good player. The numbers, he never really improved upon necessarily after his redshirt freshman season, but they were always pretty solid. The athleticism is not great. We just got to put that out there. But like you said, he's not a one-dimensional tight end. Like, he can actually do stuff as a blocker, and I think he's good enough as a pass catcher. He's not going to run away from the defense or anything like that, but I think he can be an asset. And right now he's going in the 19th round of best ball drafts. And I think that I was thinking about this a lot, maybe too much, where Ferguson, now that he's number one on that Dallas depth chart, I think a lot of people are going to be drawn to mocking a tight end to Dallas in the first round. And I think that that's going to essentially freeze Ferguson's ADP where it is, but I think that Ferguson will be better than whichever tight, except for Michael Mayer, would be better right now than any tight end that the Cowboys would be taking in the first round.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. It's hard to rule out the tight end thing in the first round. I just don't really, I'm trying to think of where, I feel like they have enough concerns on like the offensive and eventually defensive line. Like, as much as they were loaded last year, they also had a bunch of veterans and like an expensive veteran in DeMarcus Lawrence. So because Ferguson and also Hendershot, like Hendershot is a tiny bit of a concern for me too, relative to Ferguson, because Hendershot, he was a really good pass catcher in the Big Ten and is a pretty good athlete. But Ferguson is the one who should, like you said, be starter. And it's basically because he's a really good blocker and he's a good check down target. And that to me is important to look at like Dalton Schultz, not just for the number and like how high the number goes. You have to look at where he's actually functioning in the offense and see how this budgets out, how this space is out. And Schultz accumulated these numbers, yes, but he did it only in parts of the field where there were basically better things to be doing. And that the ball was going to him was not necessarily a victory for the offense. So in this part of the field where Schultz was running underneath, Ferguson is just athletic enough to run too. Like he's not a very good athlete, but it's primarily the longer speed is the issue. Like, he ran a 4.81 at the combine, but his broad jump was pretty good. His three cone was pretty good. So you can see he's got these like short area movements. And since that's the only area where Schultz was threatening in the first place, I think he's actually pretty close to as useful as Schultz as a pass catcher. And at least if the offense is going to be designed that way and they keep that design. And
the 4.8, I like to call that the Isaac Nata zone.
Yeah. And unlike Nata though, for Ferguson, I mean, he played a bunch of snaps last year. It was easy to miss because he wasn't running many routes is the problem. He literally run like 4 or 5 routes a game, playing 25, 30 snaps. So basically this year, he should be playing 45, 50, 55, and he'll be getting, I don't know, like 5 targets per 55. And your hope is that, being low on the list of defensive concerns, he'll get a high catch rate and continue to capitalize with yards after the catch, which I don't know why he was so good at that. I don't remember anecdotally if that's like screen setups, but he was getting great results. So if he can keep giving like that much yardage after the catch, catching like 75%+ of his targets and play, you know, 700 plus snaps in a Dak Prescott offense where Dak Prescott throws 30 plus touchdowns, like that's how it would all work out really well for Ferguson as a best ball, like depth kind of, or, you know, deeper tight end formats in general, I guess I should say, because it's going to be tough to know. It'll be about impossible actually to guess when he has his good games, but he should be on the field a lot, being like a plus contributor on an above average offense.
Yeah. So I'm going to stand one Jake Ferguson, at least for
maybe like right Higbee. Now. Maybe he's like a Higbee kind of player, you know, where it's like he blocks and he catches screens and he gets like 9 yards every time. And that's about it.
Good enough. You know, good enough. You know, that's ends up being a useful player, especially if you're getting him in like the 19th round. And do you think my assessment is correct that if they do go tight end early, that player will kind of keep Ferguson's price down?
I can't see them taking a round one tight end unless that player is going to start, which is, again, part of why I don't think they will. I think Ferguson would be like a third or fourth round pick again in this draft. You know, there's guys in this draft who will be as good as him or better. I just don't know why Dallas would really be in the market for them when they are largely similar to prospect level as Ferguson and Hendershot, who they already have and who are already very cheap.
Yeah, already cheaped, already like have a year of you know, playing in the NFL under their belt. Tight end, obviously a notoriously like tough transition for rookies. So you already kind of have that out of the way with
I'd say they'll take like Luke Schoonmaker in round like the late fourth or something. That's what Dallas will do.
And it's time for the Matador to dance with the blind Schoonmaker.
Is it Schoonmaker? I knew there was that band called Schooner Fair, and I didn't know if you pronounced it like that, like the boat.
I wanted to tie in the Ricky Bobby quote as I could. Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen in that one as Jean Girard, talking about the Matador. Moving on, or I guess one last Cowboys detail. You mentioned, you know, the offensive line and defensive line issues, and they also brought in Ronald Jones, like you said, at running back. That they got Tony Pollard playing on the franchise tag. There is no Ezekiel Elliott there anymore. Would it be on brand though for them to go after Bijan Robinson?
I don't think so. It's easy to forget. Like, Ezekiel Elliott was picked high, yes, and there were detractors even at the time. Even I was one of them. I was like, I'm obviously like pro running back, whatever. But even I was saying at the time, they should take Jalen Ramsey in the first and Derrick Henry in the second. And not that I had Henry, I didn't have enough, you know, guts to rank Henry ahead of Elliott, but it was clear like they should take Ramsey in the first and then they should take Henry in the second. But there wasn't really like an emphatic or even good case, in my opinion, like against the pick. It was like, we knew Elliott was going to go a couple picks later if he didn't go there. And Elliott as a prospect is much better than Bijan Robinson as a prospect, even though you got a lot of people who have been paying attention to football for like 3 years and only on spreadsheets and live scoring pages and so far as they have. And those kinds of people seem to think like, oh, Bijan Robinson must be like a top five running back all time, because look at how high his projected draft capital is. No running back is any good. So if he's projected to be this valuable, he must be good. And that's not how anything works. They might learn eventually why. But suffice to say, in the meantime, even Jerry Jones would not mistake Bijan Robinson for Ezekiel Elliott.
Even with the Texas thing.
Jerry's more of an Arkansas homer traditionally. He's not, I don't think he has a big like Texas allegiance.
You got that right. Actually, that was a test. You passed.
That's a good test.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know someone's really cool when they know that one.
Horns down. Let's get on to our next topic. But before then, a message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
So again, Ezekiel Elliott, free agent now, and one of the potential landing spots for him was the Buffalo Bills. That is no longer the case because the Buffalo Bills went ahead and they signed a younger player who can fill the similar function. That's Damien Harris. So what did you think of that move?
Well, I like Harris. I think he's definitely a really good runner. And it's so funny. There's this, I guess all fan bases go through a sort of, I don't even know what you do, like life cycle span sort of like they go through phases of, I guess they start out as larva and go so on. Forgetting that, that like when you start out, you have the low expectations and you're kind of like, you go 6-10 and you're like, we're going to win the Super Bowl next year. And that was the Bills, like Bills fans, like 4 years ago. Then like 3 years ago, they became like arthropods and started to get like more realistic ambitions. They started getting like a more discerning taste for players. You know, not everybody on our team, we vote for the Pro Bowl anymore, just the ones who really deserve it. Mm-hmm. And then they get like kind of full of themselves. They're like, yeah, we're winning the Super Bowl this year, the year after that, the year after that. And if they don't win the Super Bowl that year, then they despair and, you know, get all like depressed and overreact to everything way too negatively. And I don't know what insect or whatever phase that this is analogous to, but now Bills fans react to everything that the team does as they criticize it and say like, oh, we suck now, or at least a bunch of these people do. And so They're looking at Devin Singletary leaving and cutting Isaiah McKenzie. And they're like, I'm done with this team. It's over for us. We don't have Singletary. We don't have McKenzie.
The haters were right.
Why live? And it's like, you guys settle down. This is actually really, Singletary sucks. McKenzie sucks. So even if Harris and Deontay Hardy suck, it's just not a big deal. And check this out. They don't suck. Damien Harris is definitely a better runner than Devin Singletary. It's not a question. It's clear. He's a better runner than Singletary. And he's probably no worse as a pass catcher. Like, Singletary is not a good pass catcher. Singletary is a fumbler. Singletary's slow. So Harris will take whatever work Singletary would get, and he will give you more. It's as simple as that. The question is, how much can Harris hold up to? Because he's been hurt pretty much, especially last year and a little bit the year before that. I don't know if it was toward the end of the year, but he definitely had something the year before that, even while he ran for 15 touchdowns. So I don't know how much Harris can handle, and I actually wonder if the Bills, like, I don't know if they plan on keeping 3 or 4 running backs. They could add somebody else. I don't think it'll be Ezekiel Elliott, but it could be like another cheap veteran who's just like a little bit different, I guess. I don't know. But Harris is better than Singletary, and Deontay Hardy is way better than Isaiah McKenzie. So those two moves are going to give those two moves give the Bills like, I don't know, like a good 250 more yards from scrimmage than they had last year on the same usage for those for McKenzie and Singletary. So, Harris is a good pickup. I don't know what to make in fantasy, though. It's
he could be quite valuable. If he stays healthy, he'll be really valuable. I just don't know what's, you know, a reasonable expectation there when he's been hurt so much.
So yes, the injury is obviously a problem. 12th round. That's where he's going right now.
Yeah. Totally good there. I mean, I'd like to get some Damian Harris. I wish I picked him before, because before he was going in like the 16th or something, and those days are gone.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, but yeah, ADP around 140 right now. With the, you know, sort of running back musical chairs, I think again the Bills were kind of one of the big obvious teams that needed to add a power back like a Damian Harris or an Ezekiel Elliott. Is there anywhere else that kind of sticks out to you as potentially being in need of a guy like Ezekiel Elliott's services?
I feel like somewhere he'll definitely play. And if I had to pick, I don't want to like restrict the list exactly, because Elliott could be probably is resigned to being a backup. And I think pretty much any team would look at Ezekiel Elliott and be like, oh yeah, we will have you as a backup. Sure. So there are some teams that's not the case for. I know that I'd say, like, you know, Chicago, they got two people, the 49ers, they got enough, et cetera, et cetera. But I look at the Chargers and it's like, yeah, they actually really need Ezekiel Elliott or somebody to do what he can do. Maybe the Browns. I don't know what they think of Jerome Ford. Maybe the Buccaneers. It could be an answer that we, you know, is not pleasant for anybody. But I think the people who are counting out Elliott are not really paying that much attention. And I think, you know, we're not done seeing him.
No, he's just 27, which is crazy also.
Yeah, he's taking a beating for sure. But I mean, as much as you see these statements about like, oh, his burst is gone, we also don't know how much this could just be a case against, you know, the durability case against him. But we don't know how healthy he's been the last 2 years. We knew he played upward of 6 weeks last year on like a bum MCL or something. So it's not a shock that the guy who took all the highest impact collision carries in the Dallas offense, all the short yardage, the most bruising work, also was hurt all the time, you know? So I wouldn't be shocked if he's playing off the bench, he might look a little more spry, and especially if he's getting some off tackle carries for once.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. And yeah, I think, you know, gone are the days of him being overutilized. I think that, you know, him in a more carefully curated role.
Maybe Philly. You might see him go to some team that's very smart with the cap and comp picks, because he won't count toward the free agency tally that determines comp pick eligibility. So you can sign Elliott, and as long as you lose one more free agent then you sign, you'll be eligible for whatever comp picks the signed away players would get.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, 3D chess there. Let's round it out, sticking in the state of Texas one more time. Devin Singletary goes to Houston. Does this worry? I think I know the answer to this question before I even ask it. But you know, how much more of a buy is Damian Pierce now because of this?
Well, especially if it results in his price going down, that would be, I think, the impetus to buy Pierce, because I thought he was already acceptable. What was it? Like, must be like late sixth or early sixth.
Yeah, got him mid sixth this week. I got him right at ADP, right at 66. And he signed, Singletary signed like a couple of hours after that.
Okay, so there are some very widely read, widely viewed analysts' modes of analysis that pull the alarm, you know, the fire alarm, the second for Pierce, they pull the fire alarm. They're like, oh God, they signed Devin Singletary. Damon, we told you, low draft capital, got to get rid of Pierce. It's over for Pierce. You see, when you jam the projections into the projection machine, it says Devin Singletary gets a third of the carries. And so that means it will happen. That's not really how things work. That's not how teams build their offenses. That's not how practices occur and game plans come forth. It's like they have to build an offense by some theory or another. They have to build an offense. And this theory, no matter what it looks like, will have a certain amount of running, amount of passing to be done, and certain types of the two tests within that. So in the case of Houston's, you have the consideration of running between the tackles. That's, or at least that's all Singletary can do. Singletary can't do anything as a pass catcher. Singletary is not even an off tackle kind of place. He's between the tackles. He's too slow to get to the edge, and he's too small to take on volume, and he can't break tackles without dropping the football, as his fumble rate has shown. So there's certain things Singletary can do, but those are the only things he can do. He won't be put on the field for other made up reasons. And as far as that thing he can actually do, Pierce is still better at every turn. Pierce running last year for 4.3 yards per carry on 220 carries is an exceptional accomplishment given how dead that offense was around him. And I know there's probably a lot of people who look at, you know, Singletary running in Buffalo. Well, he's got 4.6 yards a carry. Look, he's got 800 yards on just 177 carries. Look at the tape. Watch how far off the defense is. Watch how many of his carries resemble draws. Running in an I formation between the tackles is a different game entirely, especially if the defense is not scared to death of Josh Allen throwing over the top of them or running through them or running around them. So with Houston, Singletary is not going to find such wide gaps in the defense. The defense is going to be playing narrower gaps. They're going to be ready for him. And the run really hard thing that he does, that getting yards after contact, he'll do that. But he'll be able to do it only because he's playing off the bench and he's only doing it 5-6 times a game. If Singletary has to do it 15 times, all of a sudden he doesn't have anything. The burst will go. He'll just start looking sluggish and in addition to slow. So that's how I see it going. Singletary's to me just like an off the bench mascot kind of player. And because he can't do anything, literally not even one thing, as well as Pierce, Singletary's usage is subject to Pierce's availability, not the other way around.
No, I'm in agreement there. I'm definitely not worried about Pierce as a result of this. And I think it, if anything, it makes you feel better about the idea of Houston not spending like a day two pick on a running back.
Maybe like a pass catcher. Like they still might get someone like whatever, like Tyjae Spears or something like that. And I know that would be a whole other
thing. Oh, man. Yeah, but wherever he goes, it's going to be so buzzy.
But yeah, Pierce. I'll just say this. I would have been much more intimidated if it was like Ezekiel Elliott or even like Dontrell Hilliard, because Hilliard can be a passing down guy and Singletary can't. So I think Singletary is actually, like a pretty close. Maybe it's not the best case scenario, but it is among the gooder case scenarios, I think, for
right. If you were going to do this entire offseason and the only competition that's added for Pierce ends up being Singletary and then like a sixth or seventh round running back,
they need Pierce more than ever. Yeah. As much as possible. Anyway.
100%. I think that pretty much settles it. I think we've gotten to all the major news items of the week and so on. Some good analysis there. Really Texas focused on this one in the second half, but thoroughly enjoyed it. But again, that's going to do it for us here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, presented by our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. Use that promo code RWNFL. Get that deposit match. Get that free 6-month subscription to RotoWire.com. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.